It is the Burt Cohen Show. History, what America is about, the Constitution, our rights, our liberties. Remember when Nixon was such a bad guy for spying on a few people? Huh. Oh, boy, he's got nothing on Presidents Bush and Obama. You all know about this whole NSA business here. It's been big. It's been big, the NSA with its metadata gathering program. Some people may not be concerned about it. I'm concerned about it, and our guest today I know is concerned about it because he cares, I think, quite a bit about the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Our guest today is Chuck Douglas, an old friend of mine. Chuck Douglas is a former member of Congress. I don't know if you want to admit that or not.
No, it's a legitimate part of my past, or illegitimate. Your views.
Well, he's also a New Hampshire Supreme Court Associate Justice. He was legal counsel and legislative counsel to Governor Mel Thompson from 1973 to 74. He was Associate Justice on the New Hampshire Superior Court from 74 to 76. Associate Justice, New Hampshire Supreme Court from 77 to 83. And Senior Justice from 83 to 85. And just Chuck Douglas was elected as a Republican to the 101st Congress. And he is now one of the founders of the law firm of Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey. What years was the 101st Congress that you were in?
That was 89 and 1990, Bert.
Long before the odd Congress we have these days. Well, it's great to have you here, an old friend of mine. We've occasionally worked together, occasionally disagreed when I was in the state Senate. But the purpose today is that you wrote a widely published op-ed in which you say, quote, a surveillance state is taking root. Chuck, what does that mean? What is the surveillance state that you see, and how does it square with traditional conservative American values?
Well, as a conservative, and I know, Bert, we've worked together. You're often come at things from a different direction, but I think we agree on this type of issue, and that's the beauty of people that think. A surveillance society is one that I think we're undergoing right now, where we're constantly being watched, filmed, monitored. We've got drones and satellites in the air. Every phone call that we make, including this one, is daily sent to the NSA, which is a military agency. Verizon and the other providers turn the data over under a secret court order. We've got smartphones that can track people. We've got license plate cameras and fast pass lanes. There's even a black box inside each of our cars, if they're, cars from the last 15 or 20 years, that monitors speed and things like that. We've got video cameras in front of stores and on streets. We're being watched, monitored, filmed, and recorded in a massive way. And to the extent the government grabs onto all that data, that's what's concerning, because the Fourth Amendment only has effect on the government. It doesn't have any effect on, like, inside a store. If they have store monitoring equipment, that's not governed by the Fourth Amendment. But when the government gets into it, we've moved to a different level.
Yeah, we certainly have, and it's interesting you point that out about the difference that the Fourth Amendment protects. people from government spying. I mean, there's the radio frequency identification, tiny little chips that can be placed in any virtually anything you buy. But that's a different story. We the people are supposed to be protected from the government. The government is supposed to serve us, not the other way around. Well, I wonder how much of this started with the Patriot Act, the so-called Patriot Act. I have to say so-called because I don't think it's very patriotic. But it was enacted stunningly soon after the 9/11 attacks by President Cheney, I meant Bush, and a Democrat-controlled Congress. Since that horrendous attack, hasn't everything changed, really necessitating moving beyond the old 18th century protections of privacy? Aren't such programs such as the so-called Patriot Act now essential to protect our national security? And haven't we just left that old 18th century ideal, you know, way in the past?
Well, the problem with that is that we didn't repeal the Fourth Amendment. So as long as the Constitution is still out there, and enforced, and hopefully would be enforced by the judiciary, we have those rights of privacy and a reasonable expectation of privacy that is to protect us from government agents. There was a time back in the 1760s when New Hampshire and Portsmouth specifically, along with Boston, experienced unlimited government searches. It was called the writ of assistance, and it was issued to the customs officials and British soldiers that they could search anyone, anywhere, anytime for anything. That was an open-ended warrant that was not restricted in any way. And the colonists didn't like it, especially in New England. And after the Revolution, one of the first things that happened is every colony outlawed writs of assistance, and we got the Fourth Amendment, which says that there has to be, you know, a probable cause, and you have to go before a judge if you want to search something, unless there's some emergency, like a house is on fire, you don't get a search warrant, you go right in. But there are exceptions, like, you know, that make common sense. But we had that experience, and we didn't like it, and now we have the Verizon and the Comcast and AT&T orders where every call by everybody, everywhere, all day, goes into a database kept by the military. So we're right back to unlimited military access to information that you would get under a writ of assistance, but we outlawed those.
Oh, so that was, when was that writ of assistance?
1760. The king was irritated with smuggling in Boston, Portsmouth. He was upset about untaxed tea and rum coming into the colonies. And, of course, people were, you know, they were probably over the line on a lot of things.
Yeah, well.
But that happens, and at least there was a procedure, but it was abrogated by the king when he issued writs of assistance, and that's what helped prompt a lot of anger, because soldiers would just come to your house and go through it, and you'd say, well, what are you looking for? Well, we don't have to tell you. Well, you know, it's 2 a.m, and they're just rummaging through houses. It was very offensive, and it was one of the reasons listed in the Declaration of Independence. And obviously, we've had our Constitution since,
right?
And we just have turned over way too much power under the Patriot Act. It needs to be restricted. And interestingly, one of the sponsors, who was a Republican, Jim Sensenbrenner,
right,
who I served with on the House Judiciary Committee, is one of the ones most exercised about the breadth of something he co-sponsored, and he said a lot of this that they're doing was never within my contemplation, that they have taken, you know, a little bit of something and run with it far beyond, and he's been one of the most outspoken, along with liberals because he's a conservative Republican, right, along with liberals right like Ron Wyden, mm-hmm, and Senator Udall, who have been leading the charge over in the Senate.
Yeah, it's an interesting mix. You have this.
I have Rand Paul too. I forgot, because he's been outspoken on the issue.
True, and I don't know about you, Chuck, but you know, being here in New Hampshire, we do have something called the 2016 primary. I expect Rand Paul to be the Republican nominee, but that's another story for another show. Now, it's interesting that you mention the king and trying to do this in the 18th century, and how, you know, the tradition of royalty, the people at the very top wanting to watch what the peasants are doing. And it seems kind of counter to the basic, very basic idea of self-government, that the government works for us. We don't work with the government. But it's interesting you point that out, that it's nothing new that the top wants to keep track of people. If megadata collection is not really for national security, what do you think might really be driving it? Is it just the people? What do you think, Chuck Douglas?
Well, I think it is for national security. I mean, I don't believe anyone is doing it for an ulterior motive. The problem is, it is so massive and so overwhelming, some of these programs, that they don't have proper restraints. And one of the concerns of everyone who defends these say, well, it's the law. Well, there's also the law called the Fourth Amendment, and that's part of our law, too. It's in the Constitution. And I debated a guy who was the Deputy Director of Homeland Security a month or so ago, and he kept saying, well, it's legal. Well, of course it's legal in the sense that there's a statute called the Patriot Act you can point to, mm-hmm, and Section 215 of the Patriot Act is what they're using, that says the government can have access to any relevant evidence that might relate to international terrorism. So that's every phone call by everyone in the United States, because it might someday be relevant. That's just taking it far too broadly, and they got an order from a secret court, the FISA court, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. It meets in secret. It does not have adversarial proceedings. There's no one in the room other than the government. There are occasional restrictions that the judges impose, but one of the changes people, including President Obama's review commission from last December, one of the changes would be, in effect, like a public advocate. We have that at the Public Utilities Commission. You know, we have a consumer, mm-hmm, advocate, because otherwise public service and Northeast Utilities come in and there's no one there, you know, to protest whatever they want to do. So we've institutionalized a consumer advocate. We need to institutionalize a privacy advocate to raise questions, if we're going to keep the secret court, raise questions and force the government to be a little more narrow in what it's doing. But you know, the argument is, well, it's all in the national defense. Well, yeah, in a broad sense, it is, but you can have such a sweeping program that it interferes with reasonable privacy expectations of ordinary citizens. And if we can't secure our privacy, then we're in a very different society than the founders contemplated.
And what does, we're talking about the Fourth Amendment here in NSA. Our guest today on the Burt Cohen Show is Chuck Douglas, former member of Congress, former Supreme Court, New Hampshire Supreme Court Associate Justice. The Fourth Amendment, in sum, basically protects us from illegal or unreasonable searches and seizures, correct? I wonder if you could talk just what is that and what that tradition really is.
Well, it's a good question, Bert. The Fourth Amendment, all the amendments that form the Bill of Rights were put in because a number of the states said, well, we'll approve the Constitution, but we want to see in writing limitations on this government we're creating. We want to see it in print, and we want to know there are certain things the government can't do. Because keep in mind, they had lived through the writs of assistance, and they still have them up in Canada, amazingly enough, because they're still kind of in the British tradition. We did not want to continue that type of anytime, anywhere, anyone, for anything, sweeping, you know, that's a standard with no standard. So the Fourth Amendment says the right of the people to be secure, and keep in mind, security, 9/11 type security, there's also the word security in the Fourth Amendment, and it's to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, and then there's a comma, shall not be violated. So one of our security rights is obviously not to be blown up by terrorists,
right.
But another one is to have privacy secured, the right to be left alone, as Justice Louis Brandeis said, the right to be left alone is the most comprehensive right and the one most valued by civilized people. So we've got dueling security, privacy in your home and your papers and effects, and then we've got the security concerns, obviously, about terrorism and the international flavor of it, which is the predominant concern. It's, we're always going to have some idiot with a bomb that has nothing to do with other countries, but we've also got an organized group around the world that can be a threat.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you balance them?
Right.
You have to make a reasonable balance, and the government collecting everything, to me, is not a fair balance.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, Chuck Douglas, former member of Congress and former Supreme Court Justice. And I have to say the audio is fading a little bit now and then. I don't know if the NSA could be that concerned about our little conversation, but I don't know if there's anything you can do about that at your end.
Well, I've just pushed it up. I don't know if that's helped any or not.
No, it's fine most of the time. Every now and then it drops a little bit. But I wonder, this Section 215 of the Patriot Act.
Yes, sir.
It seems that its constitutionality could be questioned. Have there been legal challenges to Section 215?
Yes. And there's a split decision in the federal courts. There was a decision, there are actually two decisions from the local or from the district courts. Last year in December, Civil Liberties Union versus Clapper. Remember, James Clapper testified in April of 2013 that there was no metadata collection program.
Right.
Senator Wyden asked him that question, and he flat out lied. He was sued by the ACLU and, interestingly, the NRA. The National Rifle Association is one of the parties in that case because they, as well as the ACLU, have concerns about privacy. And their focus, obviously, at the NRA is gun records, you know,
sure,
background checks, all that, which are supposedly those phone calls that are made from a gun store to check out whether you have a criminal record, they are done by phone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the NSA is collecting all that, and the NRA is concerned that that undercuts the privacy interests of gun owners, and could lead to some kind of national database of people who at least are attempting to buy guns. That judge went with the executive branch and did not rule against the program, But another case out of the District of Columbia held that the program was unconstitutional. And Judge Leon, who actually was a Bush appointee, I don't know if it was father or son, but I know he was a Bush appointee, said it's, and this is his words, it's one thing to say that people expect phone companies to occasionally provide information to law enforcement. It is quite another to suggest that our citizens expect all phone companies to operate what is effectively a joint intelligence gathering operation with the government. And that's what put him in the position of saying the law is unconstitutionally broad. And both those cases are on appeal and ultimately will come to the U.S. Supreme Court, I hope.
My goodness, that's, wow, that's going to be really interesting. So they're on hold now and they're on appeal. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was fascinating. I mean, you look at the odd alliance. I mean, there's a strange bedfellows, to put it mildly, of the ACLU and the National Rifle Association. Then you have Presidents Bush, George W. Bush, and Dick Cheney, as well as President Obama, kind of being on the same side of this. And PBS TV recently broadcast a remarkably good show. I don't know if you saw it, Chuck. It was really quite powerful, called The United States of Secrecy.
No.
And it was about the NSA spying, and it showed Cheney and Bush's determination to have such spying declared legal. They needed to have the Attorney General. They were required to have the signature of the Attorney General to state that what they were doing was legal. And at the time, John Ashcroft was seemingly near death in a hospital bed, and they rushed out to get his signature, and apparently he looked really ashen. John Ashcroft refused to sign it. Now, I'm not normally praising John Ashcroft, as you can imagine, but the show didn't say what his apparently impassioned arguments were, John Ashcroft. But as a fellow conservative, someone who's been in the law business, you, what would you think John Ashcroft's reasons may have been why he did not give his signature to declare that it was legal?
Well, I would think it's the same basic concern that you don't have probable cause to search everyone, you know, make all 300 million of us suspects. You don't have probable cause for that. And you need to have some articulable reason to get the data from a certain phone call, a phone number, or a, you know, electronic address, more than just let's gather all of it, and then whenever we need to graze in the field, we'll have it.
Right.
So, you know, he's a traditional conservative who was concerned. I mean, I think if he were alive today, Barry Goldwater would have had a lot of problems with this program that is going on. You can put your national security hat on and still, you know, live within the Constitution. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
I hope not. I don't think so, for sure. And on this, we do tend to agree. Chuck Douglas is the guest today, former member of Congress, former Supreme New Hampshire Supreme Court Associate Justice. Where have the two major parties been? I mean, it seems they're falling in line to support this. The Republicans, back when the so-called Patriot Act was installed, fell in line behind it. And I wonder, Chuck, did you raise your objections, legal objections, when Cheney and Bush were in power on this? And what do you, I mean, what is it with the two parties? Are they just willing to sacrifice the Fourth Amendment?
Well, I think what happened is, and I wasn't in Congress when the Act was passed, but what happened is, after 9/11, it was such a trauma, and it was so clear that it was foreign-directed, foreign-inspired. It was not something, you know, that native-born Americans were involved with. It was definitely a reach by, you know, the Al-Qaeda network that was staggering in its success. taking down those two giant buildings and killing 3,000 people there and in Pennsylvania and Washington.
Right.
It would have been hard to vote against it. I don't know, but more than a handful probably did. But those those days, you know, it's while it's still in our memory, we've had time to see how it's worked. And the beauty of dealing with it this week, and I'm not sure they're going to do a good job, but at least they're taking it up again, is, you know, we've had time to see how this secret court works. We've had time to see how broad the program is. But unfortunately, not because of the Obama administration, but because of Edward Snowden. In other words, we weren't told, let's have a debate, let's talk about this. The president has said as little as he could about it,
right.
But we wouldn't even know this was going on if Snowden hadn't released the program and the slides showing the source and the nature of what they're doing. So that's what's changed the landscape, I think, because people have said, look, neither Bush nor Obama's administration were forthcoming.
Right.
And we just don't like the breadth and scope of this. Are there some risks? Yeah, of course there are. But if we're going to be secure in our houses and in our privacy, we have to have some of those risks, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. With freedom comes responsibility, and there's risks in freedom. But we in America traditionally have kind of liked that freedom. We don't want to be a police state, for example. And this surveillance state, it seems a little bit too close to me. And as you say, Chuck Douglas, that virtually none of this intelligence about the NSA spying program would be known to us without Edward Snowden telling it to the world. Now, I've heard people say he ought to be put up against the wall and shot. I've heard people say that. What do you say to those who consider Edward Snowden to be an enemy of the state?
Well, I think enemy of the state is too broad a term. Did he violate the law? Yes.
Yes.
And should he be prosecuted for violating the law? Yes. But if we're going to have an even-handed administration of justice, certainly, James Clapper should be charged with lying to Congress. And that's something that's equally concerning because if the elected representatives are trying to find out about a program and they're sitting, this is the Intelligence Committee, it wasn't like the Agriculture.
Right.
And when Senator Wyden asked that question, and it was a legitimate one, if what Clapper should have said is, well, to the extent I would answer that, I'd have to do that in a private session, rather than deny it, because that just provides disinformation to the public, and that's frankly, from everything I've read, one of the motivating factors behind what Snowden did. He was so upset that they don't even admit the program exists that it was one of his pushing him over the edge type things. He had been starting to reach out earlier. There's a great interview with him in Vanity Fair last month, quite a detailed interview, and he does indicate that testimony, that lying about its existence, was one of the clinching factors that he said, I just can't have this lying go on.
And as I said, some people have said that he is an enemy. He is, you know, putting at risk the security of the United States, and he's basically collaborating with the enemy. Other people consider Edward Snowden a hero for what he did. What do you say to those people? Do you tend to agree with that?
I think he is a whistleblower. His motivation was not financial from everything I've read. There's no financial motive, and he was not an agent of a foreign country. He was unique in his position. He was in Hawaii, where the NSA had some concerns about transmitting data over the lines between continental United States and Hawaii, and he was one of the guys to download all the programs and put them in some new, secure system. And that's how he had access to everything and saw a lot of things. Rumor has it, from at least this article, that the worst is yet to come, that there's a lot more that will be revealed. And we'll just have to see. But history will judge whether or not he was a whistleblower, yes, who violated the law,
yes,
or whether he was somehow an enemy of the state. I think the jury's very much out on that. But what's intriguing is what is yet to be revealed. I know there's one program that he did reveal that didn't get much attention, but it's they say all we want is metadata, we don't want the actual content. If you go on the website with some of the stuff he has put up, a top secret program run by the NSA called Content Extraction Enhancements for Target Analytics. And it says SMS text messages, a gold mine to exploit, dated June 9, 2011. And it's all about content extraction. So I don't, we have been told the truth by the government. The magnitude of PRISM is Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, Facebook, YouTube, Skype, AOL, Apple, and then at the PRISM website, which, keep in mind, these are programs that were being explained to NSA employees. These are their, their slideshow for the room, you know, what you can do. And on PRISM, it says, what will you receive in collection? Varies by provider, but you may get chat, video, voice, email, photos, videos, voiceover, file transfers, all this stuff. They're looking for a heck of a lot more than just what call, you know, you dialed me on this phone number of my office. They're looking for a hell of a lot more than just that. And they're not fessing up to us the breadth of what they're trying to get, and probably have gotten.
It's how that anyone could argue that that's in concert with the Fourth Amendment. It's just not. It's just, I can't imagine that withstanding legal scrutiny, and I hope pressure is brought to bear on that, and it is checked out. Now, I've heard the argument from people. Also, you know, people on the street, I like to hear what people are saying. They say that, well, you know, okay, there's video cameras looking at us from lampposts and storefronts all the time. And, you know, if you haven't done anything wrong, you have nothing to fear. What's your response to that?
Well, that is commonly said, and often that type of surveillance is helpful if there's a robbery. I mean, I can certainly understand why you would want within a store at 2 in the morning, some way to record the cash register and who might be robbing a store. And people expect that. What they don't expect is drones, secret surveillance, having their phone calls monitored without a court-ordered wiretap, having their email trail monitored. That magnitude of intrusion, especially by, I don't think everyone understands, the NSA is a military agency. It's part of the Army. and it's run by a four-star general. This is not a civilian agency. So to have the military gathering all this is unprecedented. I mean, if we were talking 40 or 50 years ago and you proposed such a thing, people said, you got to be kidding. We're going to have the Army in 1950 monitor what TV shows you're watching or listening, you know, or tracking every phone call made on your, you know, hand-dialed phone? No. People would have said, no, that's outrageous. We can't do that.
It sounds like the Stasi in East Germany.
Well, at least there you knew they were doing it. I mean, the East Germans knew about the Stasi, knew that they were being watched and monitored, which is in keeping with, you know, the way the communists viewed life. You know, Vladimir Lenin said, we recognize nothing private in the Soviet Union. So at least then you knew what the rules were. When your founder says, we recognize nothing private, you're in a different country than where your founding fathers say, no, we want you to be secure in your privacy.
Yeah, that is just a little bit different from traditional conservative American values, I must say. And as you write in your piece, Chuck Douglas, when George Orwell wrote 1984, the all-seeing state, or Big Brother, was represented by a two-way television set installed in each home, which, again, might have been, you know, it's in keeping with Vladimir Lenin.
Yep.
How does today's reality compare with that troubling fantasy?
Well, of course, he could never have foreseen, well, he did kind of foresee, which is why he wrote the book, but I don't think even he would have conceived of this massive government storing of all this electronic data. It's so broad and unprecedented, and of course, with modern computers, they can do it. That's the change. It's not like these are file cabinets with millions of pages put in every day. It's all electronic, and it would be as upsetting to him, if not more so, to think that, you know, on my belt I've got a NSA tracking device. It's called a cell phone, and they can track, you know, where I go, when I go, and people say, yeah, but it's for our safety. The problem is, down the road, can you guarantee it will never be abused? No one can guarantee there won't be a government or a political movement or party that says, I want to get at everyone who reads the Atlantic Monthly or subscribes because they do it over the Internet. Or I want everyone who reads, you know, the NRA magazine. Can someone promise me we'll never have a J. Edgar Hoover again? Who can promise me that? I don't know that. I mean, and I may not be alive when it happens, but when it happens, I hope Americans haven't been asleep at the switch and just said, well, you know, the Patriot Act, whatever it says is fine with me, because it'll be too late at that point.
Yeah, and it seems to me that, you know, it's one thing when, I mean, we all know, well, we can know that when we use our computers that, you know, when you use Facebook and you have certain things you like books you like or music you like, that there are private corporations that want to market their stuff, and they'll target you for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a lot different, really. I mean, there's things that people like to look at on their computers that they don't want the world to know about. And the world, quite frankly, has no business knowing what they're looking at there, you know, if it's not harming anybody. It's just so out of touch with America. And, you know, we like to think that the Constitution is alive. And, you know, you have people on the right and left saying, you know, we got to go back to the Constitution. Well, we're a long ways off. The Fourth Amendment is an absolute essential part of the foundation of who we are as Americans. Now, here in New Hampshire, do you know where looking at this federally and from the state point of view, we'll look at it federally first. Candidates for Congress we have two members of Congress right now, Carol Shea Porter and Annie Custer, both Democrats. There are candidates who are running against them. Do you know where any of them stand on this issue, or have they ducked it as well?
Well, I don't know, frankly. I don't know where the candidates stand who are running in the Republican primary. I just haven't engaged on that. We do know from last year there's a split among our two current congresswomen,
right?
Because the amendment, the Amash-Conyers amendment,
right,
was voted for by Carol Shea Porter, but Custer voted against it. And that was one, I note in the roll call, Jim Sensenbrenner, who was the House sponsor of the Patriot Act, voted to put some restrictions on Section 215. And he was joined by Shea Porter, but Custer voted no. So at least on this issue, I agree with Carol and disagree with Ann. I think Ann got that wrong. I hope she votes this week when they've got amendments. I hope she votes differently. But it's also at the state level.
Right.
There is a bill that was tabled, and I think maybe is in interim study.
Uh-oh.
But House Bill 1619 was introduced by Representative Kirk, who is a privacy advocate and
absolutely
has been so for a long time.
Yep.
And what he did, which is kind of interesting, he wanted to create in the statute a new law that would say an individual in New Hampshire has an expectation of privacy in personal identifiers, content, and usage that was otherwise given to third-party providers and like cell companies, landlines, electric, etc., and that no government agency can acquire that information without a warrant signed by a judge on probable cause.
Uh-huh.
And that I went over and testified in favor of the bill. The banking industry opposed it and some of the others, so there may be a way to rewrite it to narrow it a bit. But at least Neil had a great idea, which is, because this is the flip side of this bill, what if a few years from now the government says, well, we don't have to worry about the Fourth Amendment because it's so well known in America that every time you hit a keyboard with your finger or lift a phone, we're monitoring it and keeping it. So you don't really have any expectation of privacy anymore. So don't come in arguing, oh, I had an expectation, when you know we're doing it to everything you do. And that's you know, the concern that we, in effect, repeal the Fourth Amendment by eliminating the expectation that we have some privacy in our communications.
Boy, that would not be America anymore. That really is an incredibly frightening scenario. And states have been doing things about this. I just read recently, it hasn't completely passed yet, but a California Senate committee passed a bill unanimously dubbed the Fourth Amendment Protection Act. I like the name of that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that would ban the state from participating in or providing material support or resources to any federal agency engaged in the, quote, illegal and unconstitutional collection of electronic data or metadata without consent of any person not based on a warrant that particularly describes the person, place, and thing to be searched or seized. I like that. I think that's a really good idea, and that's moving through California. And among candidates for governor right now, I'm not sure where Maggie Hassan stands. I haven't heard her say anything about it, but there are two Republicans running, and the establishment candidate, Walter Havenstein, worked at BAE Systems, which had direct contracts with the NSA for development of programs to assist with the collection of this. And Andrew Hemingway, I believe, favors a similar approach. He released a privacy package to at least attempt to protect New Hampshire citizens that included not allowing any metadata collected by any agency to be admissible in state courts. Have you looked into these two Republican candidates at all, being a Republican yourself, Chuck?
I haven't. I know this is an issue that will be out there. This is the very beginning of campaigning. And I'm sure at forums and candidates' nights and interviews, people like you need to ask them these questions, and they need to state their position, because they're going to be potentially in a position of authority, and we want to know where they stand on this type of surveillance.
And the states can do something about this. Obviously, California is doing something about it. And, you know, I got to ask, one of America's strengths has always been not just our military, but our leadership in the world. What has this NSA spying done in regard to America's international relations, Chuck Douglas?
Well, it's cost us tens of billions of dollars in, frankly, in foreign companies that have gone after business they wouldn't have a year ago, because they can offer some privacy. And that's going to be increasingly an issue for us to be competitive in the world with electronic services and so on. If people think, well, if we hire AT&T to come in and do whatever they want to do, they're going to just turn it all over to the federal military. There are studies that have shown a negative economic impact. It also cuts against our position in favor of democracy and limited government. And the third thing it does is to, show us as a hypocrite to some degree when we're tapping Angela Merkel's cell phone.
Oh, my God, I know.
I mean, is she really a potential terrorist threat to the United States? I mean, come on. Would it be interesting to know what she says? Yeah, I mean, in an abstract sense, sure, what any head of state says. But if the head of state is Yemen's, I can see the difference than if it's England, Germany, Canada, because that's none of our business, and they're allies, and they shouldn't be treated like they are the same as some, you know, precarious province in Afghanistan, where you certainly do want to do some monitoring of some governor that might be working with the Taliban. But that's very different than targeting, you know, our European allies, and Mexico, we were doing the same thing there, and they got upset about it.
Well, oddly enough, I mean, as you say, I mean, we're all suspects now. I mean, here's the army in charge, and everybody, you know, is a suspect. And what? How did we get here? What has the Obama Justice Department said about this? My sense is
They've defended both the cases. They have resisted any, you know, it's just like an institutional position. And it's disappointing, because I thought we would get some change. At least we hoped we'd get some change.
Hope and change.
The people. But they've been drawing the wagons around just the same as if it was the Bush White House. And he at least has said he agrees there have to be some revisions. But he's been pretty quiet about what those are and has not really been forthcoming on that. So it makes it hard, and, you know, it puts pressure on Democrats more than Republicans, because it's their White House. And if this were George Bush, I know where they stand.
Absolutely.
But they tend to clam up when it's Obama.
It strikes me that he's doing as little as possible. He doesn't even want to touch it, but, you know, there's some pressure on this. And most Politicians seem to prefer to steer as clear of this issue as they possibly can. But it seems to me, Chuck Douglas, you're Republican, I'm a Democrat, that there is potential for a powerful new coalition on this. But the issue seems to be kind of being ignored. Do you think there's some strength here, or is it something people don't care about, don't get fired up about?
I think it's out there. I'm sure it's not, you know, when you compare it to jobs in the economy, it's not going to be at the same level. But it's part of the unease and concern people have with, is this country going in the right direction? That type of polling reflects that people just aren't happy with a government that does this, and it would help restore faith and trust if we put some more limitations on it and required a public privacy advocate in this secret court. And if we, you know, tighten down on Section 215, we've got to show the public that, yes, we're concerned about another attack, but we're also concerned about not losing our Constitution, or there's no real point to America.
Ah, that's so true. Well, Chuck Douglas, what would you suggest, any quick suggestions for what people can do about this? I mean, obviously raise their voices, and members of Congress do listen, having been one yourself. There's a group called Off Now. What else can you suggest that citizens can do if they're concerned about this?
Well, I think when candidates are going to have candidate nights, and if they're at a luncheon or if they're at a dinner when there's a candidate, ask them these questions.
Right.
You know, put them on the spot. Let them know that people are concerned about this trend towards a surveillance state and their loss of a reasonable expectation of their privacy.
Well, we can do it. Thank you so much. Always good to talk to you. Chuck Douglas, former member of U.S. House of Representatives, former Supreme Court Justice, good lawyer. He is with the law firm of Douglas, Leonard, and Garvey up in Concord. Thanks so much for being with us, Chuck Douglas. Thank you. Is it 1984 yet?
Protection, but you know it's no game. You'll never out.